On this episode of On the Path, we are imagining a better world for female leaders. Coming up next, we're speaking with leadership developer, trainer, author, and international speaker, the one and only Jo Saxton is in the building, and she is going to equip us. She's going to light us up. She's going to challenge us in a way that I don't think I've been challenged in such a long time. So good. She's going to teach us about how to get out of our own way, the tables we should continue to carve and make space at, and the ones we should walk away from. So good. She shares her hopes and dreams for the church and also her concerns as well, and what every female leader needs to remember right now. You don't want to miss. Guys, available on all podcast platforms, or subscribe to my YouTube channel, and I'll see you on the path.
You're listening to On the Path Podcast with Cheryl Nemhard, brought to you by Fight for Freedom. Follow Cheryl Nemhard on all social media platforms.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of On the Path. I am so excited for you to sit with us as we journey through this conversation. We have a powerhouse in the building. I'm talking world changer, history maker. I know that she gets uncomfortable, but she is someone, you want to talk about fangirling? I'm fangirling right now because my girl's in the building and everything that she says just carries such weight in the kingdom. And I know you're going to love this conversation. We are speaking about female leadership, where we go from here, how far we've come, the obstacles, and what we need to know to move to the next level. I'm speaking with the one and only Jo Saxton. Let me tell you a little bit about her. If you don't know who she is, you need to know. She's an author, speaker, IJM ambassador, podcast host, and leadership coach. She has dedicated her career to growing leadership teams and investing in women leaders. Jo has led ministries, non-for-profits, pastored and planted churches. She's also written several books such as Ready to Rise, More Than Enchanting, The Dream of You, and High Heels and Holiness. Come on. And she's just getting started. I want you to welcome Jo Saxton to On the Path. Welcome, Jo.
Hi, it's great to be with you. Thank you for having me. And thank you for your very kind words.
It is such a joy to have you. Every time I see your beautiful face, I am just so happy. And I know it's going to be a great conversation today.
I'm looking forward to it. And I like seeing your beautiful face. As I have given you a new nickname, you are now Cheryl, Woman of Valor with the Glamour. I feel that's appropriate.
I salute you and I will receive that. I'll receive that. My goodness, Jo, you are also, speaking of valor and bravery, you are one of the bravest people I know. And when I think about advocacy, when I think about truth-telling, when I think about a holy disruptor, you're really at the top of the list for me. And you know, I think probably a good place to start, because in all of our conversations and in all of the times I've sat underneath your teaching, I don't think I've ever heard your life story. And I think behind every big life is a big story. And I'd love to know, I'm sure it'd be great for us to get to know that side of you. Tell us a little bit about the beginnings of Jo Saxton's life and what kind of drew you to this place and season of your life.
Oh, gosh. Where do I begin? So I am the child of Nigerian immigrants. There's a very large Nigerian community in England. I grew up in London. In the midst of that, my parents weren't married in the time when I was born. I spent a few years in foster care, then went back to live with my mum. We grew up in the inner city of London. Now, all of those parts I'm going to describe are beautifully gentrified now, so no one would know. But I knew in the 80s, it was a different place. I came to faith as a child. There are a number of religion. I have a very big family, wonderful family, number of faiths and spiritual journeys represented in that. I came to faith as a child when I was about 9 years old. And I think in terms of what brings me to where I am, I think in all of our lives, there are things which mark us, aren't there? There are things which mark our story. I was marked by the reality that in our world where we were at, it wasn't fair. That we weren't viewed on account of our potential or our purpose. We were viewed by our immigrant status. We were viewed by the darkness of our skin and our blackness. We were viewed by our gender. And I remember the point when I went to college outside of London, And here, a group of friends and I were just comparing the things we had at school and how they learned how to play the flute at school and learn how to play the piano. And we just didn't have those kinds of resources in our school. And I remember this moment of grief thinking, I could, now, let's be clear, Cheryl, I don't know that I was going to play the flute, but I think what hit home and hit hard was this fact of growing up in an area where we just didn't have, our school didn't have the resources that other schools did. Now, that didn't mean the kids in that school weren't as talented, weren't as bright, didn't have as much potential. They didn't have access to those things. And I think I've always been marked by the, what does it mean to make this accessible for everybody? Because there is untapped potential, unseen beauty and value and talents and gifts. And it's not because it's not wanted and it's not because they're not able, it's that they didn't get the opportunity. And for me, that was one of the big threads of my life growing up, of knowing, feeling the lack, knowing that lack for myself and my community and wanting a different life.
Goodness. And, you know, I love what you said, wanting a different life. And, you know, that is literally, it seems like that's a spark that has never left you, because now we fast forward to you as a leadership developer and trainer. And I know that what burns in your heart is that you are constantly imagining and reimagining a better future, a better world for female leaders. So I got to ask you, in your mind, when you see that better world for us, stepping in fully, unencumbered, unhindered, what does that look like, a better world for female leaders?
You know, I think it begins early on, before they're even leading. So I'll get to the point of what it looks like for when they're in that world. But I think it begins with the assumption that those women have something to say, that the assumption that every woman of every age, every ethnicity, every culture, every socioeconomic group, every physical ability, every generation, every physical size, has every marital status, has been imbued and infused with gifts and talents and abilities, that they are image bearers, and therefore we can assume. One of the biggest frustrations I heard over the last 10 years of saying, you know, wasn't just that we don't know where women leaders are, but this kind of sign of, we don't want to just pick them. We don't want to be tokenistic. And I'm like, what makes you think that God has not already anointed and appointed people? Of course you will find Black women who are gifted. Of course you will find Latina women who are gifted. Of course you will find Indigenous women who are gifted. Why? Because they were made by the King of Kings. So for me, a better world for women begins with the assumption that as image bearers, that they have a contribution to make. Because if we assume that, we will look for it. If we assume that, we will train well. And what I'd observed over the years was that the kinds of leadership development and training that women received was not the same as what the men received. The kind of information, the kind of content, the kind of nuance, the kind of caught not taught things were not the same. So is it any wonder that we're not, that people aren't equally prepared? So it starts with the assumption, then it would go to the recruitment and the training development. A better world for women means that we will recruit in a different way. We will pay them equitably. We will train them equitably. We will even train and develop them equitably. And that we will build on-ramps and pathways that women can actually walk on, rather than saying, there's a pathway over there that all the guys are, find a way to jump on. And then it would look like opportunity, access to opportunity, and ongoing access that doesn't expect women to fit a particular mold. And honestly, I've seen this for male leaders as well, where they've been expected to fit a particular mold. So we would not be like, oh, you know, that woman's a little bit too strident or too strong. We would not bring our cultural and ethnic stereotypes to our expectations of women in leadership because, well, no. Well, no. We would not be afraid of a woman leader being strong and having a contribution to make. We will not be afraid of men and women working together. We will create spaces where that is a healthy and glorious and wonderful thing, because of course. And we would, and most of all, you know, most of all, we would see God's kingdom come. We would see God's kingdom come, because that's the point. We would see healthier communities. We would see holistic communities. We would see better leadership practices, because when you have all the voices at the table, you're more likely to have that. You know, it's data driven that companies are better financially when you have a more, when at the at its leadership structures, not just in the kind of mailroom, but in the C-suite, you have a diverse group. It creates better brainstorming. It creates, you understand your audience better, your market better. You are learning to live with difference in a healthier way. There's greater innovation. So I think we would have a better world, not because I don't expect guys to understand how women think. Because you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
You don't know what you don't know. And so my anticipation is if we work out how to invest in men and women in holistic, healthy, contextual ways, we will do a better job and we will see better results.
We're just going to call the choir to come up at this time as we collect the offering, and we're going to sing Nearer My God to Thee in E flat. Listen, this lady is preaching already. It's question two. My goodness, that was the answer of the ages and so, so needed. That was a soundbite that I know many people will play back again. Let's dig deeper. Let's talk about the challenges. We've spoken about the challenges that we as female leaders carry and face and work through and navigate daily. But now compounding all of that has been the past 2.5 years of just unbelievable crushing disappointments and setbacks and losses and grief and tensions and all the things. I got to know, what are the tough lessons? I mean, it's been a hard time. So many leaders are checking out, Joe. So many churches are almost imploding within themselves. We're hearing deconstruction every other few minutes. And there seems to be sort of this sort of white flagging that's just happening all over the kingdom. I've got to ask you, as you've been navigating this season, what are the lessons that are coming up for you? And how do we as leaders navigate this difficult moment?
Yeah, I think on a personal level, there have been two things. That one, these past couple of years have been a great accelerator. And I think we've seen that in the wider culture. And it's been said in the wider culture that it's like people's understanding of technology. You know, you kind of, if you were passive about it before, you're going to get with it now, things like that. But it's also been a great revealer. It's been a great revealer of deeply embedded realities that were there all along, inequities that were, the gaps got bigger, the chasms got wider. And so I think what it revealed to me, it made me ask a couple of questions. One, what was your calling and what was a vehicle for your calling? So if you can't speak and travel to places anymore, what was that, a vehicle or was that your calling? And I realized, oh, maybe there were some things which were vehicles that I'd actually treated as calling. And so there was a review that needed to happen. And I would invite us as leaders to ask ourselves the question, that thing you were called to, that you built your world around, that you found security in, and that we found security in, that we were invested in, was that the call or was it a vehicle? And is God allowed to change the vehicle? But, you know, it's just awkward. It's just awkward, but I think it's important for us because we will need a new vehicle for a new era. And that vehicle may not be as glamorous as the last one. It may not look as cute as the last one. It takes us a while to get used to. You were used to driving an automatic and now it's a manual or stick shift or whatever it is. So that was one of the lessons. I think it exposed tiredness that already existed in leaders. A maxing out. That yes. The structures, the way of leading, that I don't have the energy to keep on performing leadership, to performing yes. things that keep everybody happy. I cannot keep on doing this. I've got to find a new way for a new day.
So good.
And I think that's a reality that we've got to think through and work through. We've got to find a new way for a new day. I tell you what, Cheryl, that it has made me realize. I have a friend that I meet and pray with 3 mornings a week on the phone in pajamas. We don't need to see what each other looks like at that hour. And since in the past couple of years, our prayer times have lengthened. We didn't realize it. I just looked back and thought, our prayer time has doubled.
Wow.
Not because of some kind of like wouldn't it be wonderful if we prayed more? No, no. It came out of desperation. And I think it's been a picture for me of this era has thrust us into a wilderness, and we will need deep roots, deep wells to be able to navigate our way through a deeper dependence on God for us to find our way through so that we can understand people, that we've got grace for people, because people are maxed out and then we're maxed out as well. Our families are maxed out. Our significant relationships are maxed out. Our world around us is maxed out. How do we have the strength for this day? Our understanding of leadership has had to warp and change with the moment that we're in. We will need to be deeper. We will need to go deeper. We will need to sustain from a deeper well than the latest cultural view. And this, I say this as someone who I love looking at cultural views and hearing and listening to what is the shifts in our culture. But beyond that, we will need a spiritual capacity and a deeper capacity beyond what we've known.
Yes and amen. Yes and amen to a deeper capacity than what we've known, going deeper. Each and every leader, male and female, listening to this, what a reminder for us to examine regularly the call, to examine the call, and to know whether this is a deep Kairos, God calling us into this moment, or is this something that we've sort of shifted and sort of made by our own hands? Because all of that is falling away. All man-made, handmade, nice to haves are not surviving in this tsunami. You've got to know, as they say in the old church, you got to know that you know that you know, right? Mm. Yeah. So listen, I want to ask you about the church. We're here. We're talking about the church. This is a big one. This is a big one. As we think about leadership, as you think about the current state of the church, what is your hope? What's your hope, Joe, for the church? And what is your concern for her in this moment, in this season?
The thing where my hope is in, one thing that I'm excited about, not excited, but I'm like optimistic about, and I guess hopeful about, is the reality that God has always led his people and called his people in times of great upheaval. You know, we see these prophetic voices emerging in the Bible in times of great upheaval. We see the early church birthed in a time of great upheaval and oppression and all kinds of trauma and stress culturally for the people of God. And so knowing the character of God, I feel hopeful that he will raise up his people again. I think our challenge in this moment is whether we will be nostalgic instead of prophetic, whether we will be like, you know what? The wilderness is hard. Egypt, at least we had food. At least we had bricks and straw for the bricks. I don't know how to navigate this way. So send me back to there. Send me back to the world I used to know when it fit, where I could read my metrics. I didn't need to take 3 years to work out what the metrics would be. Send me back to there and let me elevate the stories of those where they're still going. Let me do that instead. I think that's a challenge. I think that's a challenge for us on a personal level, on a communal level, on a collective level. In this moment, it's understand, and nostalgia is not terrible, because who doesn't want memories? Memories of people we've loved, things we've enjoyed, things we've done well. But if we're dependent on those things at the expense of this moment, then that's a concern for us. Because then we will look and say, the old wineskins are better. We don't know these new wineskins. Because what we're doing is we're comparing entire institutions that were built over generations to seeds. Seeds that are sown and are fragile and vulnerable. Of course, the institution thing's gonna look better. And we won't realize that it's a grief response or a trauma response, but we're calling it leadership, you know, in some way. And I don't say this to shade us. It is absolutely understandable. Would I like the security of the last 2.5 years? Yes, I would. I would like the predictability. I'd like the safety. I'd like the ease. But Cheryl, may I be brutally honest? Please. I like the ease, which covered up the things that were fundamental discomforts that have always been there. I'd like to not have to face the things that are now glaring. Um, I What is also comfortable is the speed at which I was going, which forced me not to look at the things that were brutally there all along.
I have to ask you, it's not on script. How do we face those things that are now glaring?
I come back to the words of a friend of mine who grew up in Rwanda and talks about the first, and then ended up moving to England after the devastating events of the 90s and went back as a grown woman to some of the reconciliation work that was happening there. And obviously this is a woman who's lost multiple members of her family, whose life was completely turned upside down, who is living a different narrative, a redeemed narrative, but it's not like you forgot the other one existed. And I remember asking her after the murder of George Floyd, we were in a conversation and saying, you know, when people were like, we don't want to have these conversations, it's too divisive. Why don't, you know, Jesus is enough. Let's just keep moving on. And she said, I understand why people say all of those things. But let me be clear, you cannot heal what you will not name. And for me, in these moments, I go back to Rwanda. I go in my mind and the stories that we've heard of the church there and the church in South Africa. And I think there is wisdom for us. There is instruction for us. I go back to how Germany sought to move forward after the fall of Hitler. And I don't say that the things that we're dealing with are as significant as any of those things. That's not what I'm asking. I'm saying, how did people face the impossible in devastating circumstances? I'm not trying to do an oppression Olympics here and say, oh my gosh, that was worse, let's get it together. No, I'm saying, how can we glean from the wisdom that has been hewn out of deep suffering and deep struggle that we could learn some principles? And what we see in these different contexts, very different cultural contexts, they couldn't heal what they would not name. And they named it. They named it. And I think one of our challenges is to name, and to not automatically assume that naming is accusation. It is naming. I think the enemy will tell us it's accusation to even name things sometimes.
So good.
We start by naming.
We start by naming. So, so good. Step one. We start by naming. I'd love to ask you about, I mean, you're giving us such tools. So let's just continue to equip people that feel like they are at the edge of a cliff. What are the most important values you consider to be crucial when you're thinking about leaders, or when people are thinking about stepping into leadership? What are the things that are crucial in terms of values?
I am reminded, and one of the things I've had to learn again these past couple of years is that I'm already loved. I'm already loved. I'm already seen. I'm already loved before I've done a single thing. And we see it in Jesus's baptism, where the Father says, so this is good. My son, whom I love, and I'm proud of him. Ain't done nothing yet. No healings, no nothing, no nothing. No, nothing. The Spirit is there. The Father is there. The Son is there. And there's this word of affirmation. So that's one thing. The other thing that has been incredibly important to learn and to remind myself in this moment is that God does not tolerate the way he wired me, the gifts he gave me, the call he gave me. He celebrates it. He designed it and he celebrates it. And I would say this for us as men and women in this moment, because it may be tempting to try and morph our gifts and calls into things that are more convenient. But you've got to lead the way God called you. You've got to lead according to your design. Now, I'm not saying don't have social skills, people. This is not a get out of jail free card for your character. This is not like, well, I'm called and I'm anointed, so I can talk to anybody the way I want. I can treat people the way I want. I can be rude anyhow I want. I can be selfish and narcissistic. No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, if we have been called to lead and we've been given gifts, then lead. And we know that as we lead in the pattern of Jesus, that is serving. That is serving others. Mm. That is a path of humility. That is a path of death to self and all of that too.
That's so good. I want to ask you this question. I know you're good for it. It's not anywhere in our conversations, but this, I feel like we need to to speak about this. How do we get out of our own way? I'm hearing from you so clearly that there is a divine path for leadership, and all the other things that we put our hands to are what sort of muck it up and make it difficult and hard to navigate. So what do we do sort of in our thinking mentally? How do we get out of our own way in leadership?
I've had to learn, and I wish it was a one-time thing. I wish it was a one-time thing, but it's been an ongoing thing. That getting out of my own way has come by a number of ways. I've had to acknowledge what is in the way, and sometimes that's taken a long time to do. I've had to acknowledge the parts, the broken pieces of my story, past and present, that get in the way, or the things that I visit again. And then I ask what is God saying, and what am I going to do about, and what am I currently doing about what God's saying? So sometimes you get out of your own way by going and seeing a therapist, because the boulders are too big for you to move on your own. Sometimes you get out of your way by learning, by getting the investment, the training, the development, because there are muscles there that just need some strength training. There are gifts that are raw and they have flashes of brilliance, but they're not hewn well. They're not shaped well. You know, it's like when your kid gets a bike for Christmas that, they've got to learn how to ride it. And for a while, they're riding in this kind of really interesting fashion. But without learning, you don't get to the point where you're able to use that gift as it's intended. And so for some of us, that's the journey. But we get out of our own ways by not treating our leadership as a performance, but a call. And when we are called, we respond. Our leadership is a response to somebody. It's a response to what God is inviting us to join him in on, rather than a go and do this and don't mess up and look good for me. And so for me, getting out of my own way is one, being honest about what's in the way and not spiritualizing that, doing the work and whether that's therapy, whether that's prayer, whether that's confession, whether that's forgiveness, whether that is organization, all of these things be active. It's an active, ongoing work of keeping these things out of the way and then taking the next step forward.
Every time I talk to Joe Saxon, there are no words. I am speechless. Every time I speak with this powerhouse, such nuggets of truth, such wisdom. I'm so thankful for her voice in this season, helping to navigate so many female leaders, so many leaders, period, in this season. And I'm so thankful for her. I hope that you were encouraged. And I hope that you learned something today about stepping up into leadership, understanding the timing of God for yourself, when to stay, when to leave, how to get out of our own way, and what's required on the inside to navigate, to brave this current climate. So I encourage you today to step into the bold, big, bold things that God has called you to do. Until then, keep living, keep learning, keep loving, and keep leading, guys. Keep leading. I'll see you on the path.
You're listening to On the Path Podcast with Cheryl Nemhart, brought to you by Fight for Freedom. Please like, download, and subscribe. This has been an Exousia Media production.